You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7 WVXU and WMUB. Good morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along. And glad to have on the phone with me Andrew Solomon. I loved his book, Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. It was the winner of the National Book Critics Circle Award. He's also won the 2001 National Book Award for The Noonday Demon, An Atlas of Depression, and has just released a new book, Far and Away, Reporting from the Brink of Change, Seven Continents, 25 Years. Andrew Solomon, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
What a pleasure to be here.
You write in the acknowledgments that you thought this would be simple. Oh, I'm just going to get some old articles and put them together, and it turned out to be much more of an endeavor than you thought, gathering these old writings. Tell us about that process and why you decided to reflect on this quarter century of writing.
Well, it was partly a process because I had so many articles to reread and select among, and partly because I wanted to add introductions and conclusions to each of them to bring them up to date and to set them in context. The reason that I wanted to do it now is that I feel as though we live in a moment when people are questioning the value of internationalism. We've seen it with the Brexit vote in Europe. We've seen it with some of the proposals coming from the Republican nominee that there's a disavowal of our connection to other places. And I wanted to write about what the advantages of internationalism are and about the idea that in a globalized world, it is not only impossible to close out the rest of the world, but also actually undesirable, that by opening ourselves to other places and looking at them as broadly and as deeply as we can, we actually end up with a more stimulating, more engaged, and ultimately more prosperous way of being.
I have to say I was very envious as I read some of these writings and reminisced about the time. It seems that you were very fortunate to be working at a time when you were in the right place at the right time, I guess you would say, Andrew. It seems that you really had a frontline view at many of the big changes that the world's been going through over the last 20, 25 years.
Well, I feel fortunate that I did. I mean, I was on CNN recently, and they captioned me as an eyewitness to history. And I was in Moscow in 1991 during the putsch that ended the Soviet Union. I was in Afghanistan during the invasion in February of 2002. I was in Libya at the very end of the Gaddafi period. I was in a lot of other places that were in moments of great upheaval and change. And part of what I wanted to write about in this book is what that kind of change looks like, and to describe the kind of optimism and hope that's there, to talk about how often that optimism and hope ends up being dashed, but to observe that actually even when the things that people hoped for didn't work out as well as they had hoped they would, that nonetheless, there is value in having had a moment of hope, and to look at what hope really is like and how it functions in the world economy.
And how universal the human experience is, because I was struck reading each of these essays from various points around the globe that there is more in common among us humans than a lot of us humans give us credit for.
So often we have this idea that people from abroad are aliens and that they are trying to take away from us whatever it is that we value or whatever it is that makes our lives feel worth living. And I really wanted to look at the idea that, in fact, those differences often are at the other side of people who would like to be able to communicate with us, and that what we perceive to be threatening is frequently, in fact, very joyful.
I loved in the introduction a line, I'll just quote it here. Traveling with my parents when I was younger, I had absorbed the touristic notion that a visitor should come to observe a society, not to engage with it. As a journalist, I quickly became aware of the narrowness of that precept. And as I read Far and Away, I did realize that it is evolving or involving yourself in a culture, in a place that really brings you much more insight than just observing from the deck of a ship as you float by.
I don't really believe in the modern value of journalistic neutrality. I think the idea that you go someplace and all you do is observe tends to mean that you get a very narrow view of the place. You get quotations from the people you've interviewed, and you get some visual observation of the place, when I was writing about artists at the end of the Soviet Union and then through the development of Russia as an independent nation state, I felt like they were people who had a great deal to say. They were a kind of informed, intelligent group of people commenting on what went on, often ironically, often playfully, often hilariously, and that the best way to write about them was actually to be friends with them and to be engaged in their lives. And that was kind of the driving principle everywhere else I went, was to try to really form relationships and to become intimate with and close to people. And the stories that have come out of it are amazing stories of people people telling me all kinds of secrets and hopes and dreams. You know, when I was in Afghanistan, for example, I remember I had gone around to talk to people who were musicians because I wanted to write about the rebirth of culture following the fall of the Taliban. And there was one group of musicians someone had sent me to see. There were no phones. You had to just show up to see people. I went to see them and they said, you know, there are only five of us here today. There are seven of us in our group. If you want to hear us all together, we could get together in a few days. And I said, well, that would be great. And then I said, this place seems not very comfortable where they were practicing. I said, would you like to come to this house that I've rented with a bunch of journalists and play there? And then when I got home, I thought, wow, I've got seven musicians coming to play in my house. So I said to the other journalists who were sharing this house in Kabul, which was an old Al-Qaeda house and rather comfortable, that we had these musicians coming. And they all invited friends, and I invited the other people I'd been interviewing. And I ended up having this fantastic party in Kabul. And the musicians started playing at 5 o'clock. They said they would play for an hour. They were so thrilled to have this audience of almost 100 people, and we had enough food for everyone to eat. And they ended up sitting down, and they started to play at 5 in the afternoon, and they were still playing at 5 o'clock the next morning. And there was such an ecstasy of discovery about it, and there was such a yen for connection with the foreign people who'd come to connect there, but also with one another, something that had been denied to them around music throughout the Taliban period. It was the most, in a way, the most beautiful music I've ever heard.
Far and Away, reporting from the brink of change, Seven Continents, 25 Years, the newest book from Andrew Solomon, a collection of articles and essays he has written in the past as he traveled around the world. Details about the book at our website, wvxu.org. Russia, you talked about being there at the breakup of the Soviet Union. You also traveled to Afghanistan and Japan, Libya, you mentioned China, Antarctica, Indonesia. What have you found? I was looking for a thread through all these essays that you included in Far and Away, and I saw many different threads, but not one single thread. Did you find one piece that is kind of tying all these together in the book?
I guess if I had to come up with a single thread, it would be more of my technique than of the places I went, which is to say that there's a lot of writing that suggests that most of these countries consist either of the kind of bureaucrats people go out to interview, or the kind of man on the street who was the taxi driver, or the person who cut their hair, or the waiter in their hotel. And I think every society actually contains a broad swath of intelligent, informed people, people probably very much like those who are listening to this program and who are interested in public radio, who have a lot to say about their societies. And I wanted to get their lost point of view. Of course, in different countries, people have different points of view, and I'm not going to tell you that people in Japan have exactly the same point of view as people in Libya. They don't. But I also found that there's much more optimism in the world than people realize, and that there's a lot of hope out there, and that we sometimes lose sight of how intense that hope is and how profound it is. And I'm not a sort of a crazy optimist. Some of the places I went were deeply tragic, and some of them ended up in a tragic position. But I found over and over again that there was an informed group of people who were using hope as the basis for trying to better their societies, and that as opposed to having people who are just there trying to make trouble, every society is full of that yearning to understand and to be understood.
You have some wonderful adventures and just heart-lifting experiences, but at the same time, very scary. A lot of people think, oh, international journalist, that's very romantic, but it has its seamy, seedy, and scary side at times, too. And you share some of those experiences, too, getting punched in the jaw in Taiwan. How's that?
Yes, I was in Taiwan for what I thought was going to be the least challenging of the stories I was doing. It was about an exhibition coming from the Taiwan Palace Museum to the Metropolitan. People in Taiwan had ended up getting angry that all of their greatest treasures were being shipped off to the United States. They said they were going to a country where nobody would know the difference between the painting and a copy, and why not just send a copy? The American Museum curators, of course, said we are not going to do an exhibition of copies of paintings. We're going to do an exhibition of actual paintings. It escalated into enormous tension. And I was out in a bar one night with a friend in Taipei, and I was talking about the situation in probably too loud a tone of voice, something I've tried not to do. And I said that I sort of thought, you know, that the protests were maybe a little bit misguided and that actually people were very interested in this work in the United States. And someone thought I actually worked for the Met Museum, was part of the protest movement that had taken place, and walked over and socked me in the jaw. My friend kind of grabbed me and said, we've got to get out of here. So I didn't get kidnapped in Afghanistan. I didn't get assaulted in Libya. But in Taipei, I ended up with a big black and blue mark on the side of my face.
And you did get kidnapped in Ecuador as well. You know, among these misfortunes, what was the scariest, Andrew?
What was the scariest? I mean, Libya was very scary because I was under such intense surveillance. There was one night when I had a phone conversation with someone back home and said that I felt like I was really constantly having people get in the way of my accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish. And the next day I went for a meeting with the head of the International Press Office, who was sort of my bête noire there, and he said, I think you're exaggerating when you say that I have been deliberately preventing you from doing things. So that was pretty scary. The scariest, though, I think, was probably near the beginning when I was in Moscow during that putsch. I had written a book about the artists of the late Soviet period. They had been involved in organizing the resistance to the coup, the one which ultimately ended the Soviet Union. I had gone with them to sort of march around in the area where it was happening. Someone came running up and said, there are tanks approaching the barricades. You have to come and stand and protect our barricade from the tanks. And we sort of sauntered up, not really believing that there would be tanks coming. And indeed, a column of tanks rolled up. And there we were, standing hand in hand in front of this barricade. And I thought, this is not what I signed up for when I started writing about art. And we all stood there, and the soldier on the front tank said, if you'll get out of the way, there's no reason for us to hurt you, but we have unconditional orders to destroy this barricade, and if you won't get out of the way, we'll have no other choice. And one of the artists I was with said, give us just a minute to tell you why we're here. And he launched into this beautiful, fluent praise of democracy, and all of the others joined in, and they talked about freedom and liberty in a way that those of us who live in a free and liberated democracy would be very hard-pressed to do. And they all talked about it, and they said, you're very young, you don't remember what tyranny was like, let me tell you what it was like, it was terrible. And they said, you say you're following orders, but you are choosing to follow those orders, it is your choice. And we all finished, and we all stood there, and I thought, are they going to gun us down? Are they going to get us out of the way? And the soldier on the front tank looked at us for a full minute, and at the end of a minute he said, what you've said is true, and we must bow to the will of the people. If you will step out of the way so that we can make U-turns, we'll turn around and we'll leave you your barricade. And they turned around, and they drove off. And by the end of that day, the coup had fallen, not because of that episode, but perhaps because of many episodes like it. It was both the scariest and the most exhilarating experience of my life.
They're beautiful stories all through Far and Away, Andrew. And I love your prologues and epilogues for some of the articles. I'm curious, as you were putting this together, as you were writing those prologues and epilogues, what insight you gained from these places that you hadn't gained from those the previous experience? I mean, was there something that you saw that you was surprising to you as a writer?
It was striking to me how little you can predict what's going to happen. And it was also really striking to me how important it is when you stand up against something terrible, as many of the people I was writing about had, mm-hmm. that you have something to take its place. So the most shattering disillusion for me was Libya. The Gaddafi regime was worse than you can possibly imagine. It was the most oppressive place I've ever been. But I felt in the time when we were going in to help liberate Libya that if we could get rid of Gaddafi, it would have to be better, whatever followed. And in fact, what's followed is even worse. And so part of what I realized as I wrote the pieces is that some of the places I wrote about, like South Africa, really are better. They're problematical still in various ways, but it's better than it was in the late apartheid period when I first went there. Some places, like Rwanda, are better, but the betterment feels very fragile. It feels like it could crash at any time. But other places actually got worse through the exercise of this exuberant hope. And so I became very interested in the kind of tension between what is wrong with the place as it is and the need really to formulate very clearly what you expect to happen when you get rid of what's problematical. And it's sort of a shame that members of the Bush administration didn't have that lesson already in front of them when we went into Iraq. You can't knock out what's there unless you know what you're going to put in place of it. And that was what I felt over and over again. The places where the people knew or where people abroad knew what was to come next had succeeded. The places where no one knew had failed.
Well, Andrew, thank you for all the insight and the stories in your book, Far and Away, and your time this morning. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Andrew Solomon. His latest book is Far and Away, Reporting from the Brink of Change, 7 Continents, 25 Years. A lot of stories in there for you to enjoy. You can learn more about the book at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.